This is Simply Lowai, and you're listening to The Expert with a Heart.
So quickly, we've arrived at the concluding episode of this podcast. Welcome back to Simply Lowai, everybody. If you're just joining us, I would urge you to watch the previous episodes in this series or listen to them wherever you get your podcasts. But really, on Simply Lowai, we've been discussing the world of cross-border finance. And today's episode, where, you know, going the last mile, where we unpack that little bit that we have left, and it's going to get a little bit technical, so pay close attention. Joining me, of course, is Lowai Navlakhi, the expert with a heart, and also the CEO and MD of International Money Matters Private Limited, as well as Paresh Shah, who is our cross-border expert, really joining us on this series. He's the CEO of Paresh Shah Partners and comes to us with a wealth of experience. Really, we've got a wealth of experience duo in both of our speakers today. So let's get on with it. In our last episode, we left the conversation talking about a few more case studies. But now I really want to dive deep into the implications that come with cross-border finance, right? I think all of us can relate to the one fact that taxes are no fun. We just don't enjoy them. I don't know anyone who does. and to be honest with you, I think doing taxes in one place is difficult enough. But imagine having to keep track of tax implications, regulations, policies, you know, economics at play on both sides of the border, right? That can get really tricky, sticky, whatever icky you want to call it. An interesting situation from a K-drama comes to mind. I'm going to set the context. I'm getting there, Paresh and Lowai. Just wait for a second. So in this K-drama, there was this character. He was like the villain of the series. Wasn't a good guy. Did many things that he could have been, you know, put into jail for, but always got away with it. But the thing that finally got him at the end was that he was gifted a piece of property as a bribe. It wasn't a gift, but, you know, gifted a piece of property as a bribe. And he didn't pay the correct tax on it. And that's eventually what all the prosecutors used to nab him and put him into jail. So you see, with that, transferring of assets, that kind of thing, there's a lot at play. So what do you have to say about that? That's my question.
Are you going to give our email IDs, whatever? That's the place to go to, right?
Yeah, you frame the answer, but I'd like to say that the U.S. takes the lead on that kind of situation. Uh-huh. In 1929, the Chicago mobsters were very particular. Yeah. And eventually what happened was that nobody would come into court to testify against the any murders or any crime that was happening by those mob bosses in Chicago. So eventually they raided the place and mm-hmm. they got a ledger of the account and they put him behind on not paying of taxes. And that's how they put the big crime on. So the U.S. took the what you saw on that soap has actually happened in the U.S.
So I think the important thing on this is that we have to recognize the fact that particularly post the global financial crisis, governments, income tax departments across the globe are talking to each other. Yeah. Data is available. There is a common reporting standard which 140-150 countries have signed. FATCA applies to US and all these countries. So essentially, if you are holding assets in any other country, you're supposed to report, at least. Then you may also have to pay tax. And then if, you know, you are in countries where inheritance tax applies, then that also could come into play.
Right.
So essentially, having the ability to talk to people who are aware about this becomes crucial. And what we've realized as financial advisors by ourselves, I don't think we have all the answers. So we have a bunch of people whom we work with. So it could be an advisor like Paresh for US. It could be a CPA firm. It could be an advisor in another country and so on and so forth. But we need to make sure that we are part of such networks where other advisors who are in turn similarly dealing with cross-border situations from their different countries and regions. If we have access to them and we can talk to them, which we do, that enables us to give the clients the right answers.
I think these sort of well-rounded solutions are becoming very important
very
in every
important.
Area of life.
So I think there are three aspects that I can think of on money itself. That what happens is if issues will be what should I do with my money where I get maximum return. Then there will be issues with what do I do with the money so that I minimize my tax. And third is, you know, in case something happens to me during this time frame that I'm sort of moving stuff, how do I protect the maximum amount that goes to my beneficiary so that inheritance tax is limited? And in all this, I shouldn't get caught and, you know, not follow law somewhere. So
very interesting. There was a gentleman who had moved to the from India, Indian person serving the Indian government, had moved to Sweden or Norway. And there he had met an American lady who was at that time working in Sweden. And they got married and shifted to Bangalore. And they were Loai's clients.
Oh, yeah.
And then she started receiving a pension from this work that she had done in Sweden. So the Swedish government made her put all her tax papers together. And by common reporting standards, that was reported to the Bangalore IT office. And within the 15 days of her getting her first check, the Bangalore IT office sent her a notice. We've got this. How are you going to be reporting it? You know, then Loai referred them to us when they were in New York and I met them to look at the tax implications from the US perspective of that particular income coming in because she's a US citizen.
And then we met a CPA whom Paresh had referred from the US who came down here, looked at her returns in Bangalore and said, oh, this is wrong. You know, I can redo this and you will get refunds. So I think just having the right advice is crucial.
We cannot be losing out on our refunds.
Yes, absolutely not.
Yeah, we had a lady coming from the UK. She had been living in the UK. She had lived 20 years in the US with her husband, at that time she was married, she had an apartment in Manhattan, which was her part of her divorce settlement.
Okay.
So, and she had continued to maintain that apartment in the US. Her kids have moved to, one daughter is in the US, one son is in Dubai, and the third son is in Singapore. And because of the one son being in Dubai, her tax residency is Dubai. But she lives in the UK almost most of the time.
Wow.
And so she came to the US to sell the apartment. And the biggest thing was that in the US, like it is here, I think, now that has been introduced even in India, that if you're a non-resident, there is a withholding for tax when the buyer has to withhold on the gross, not on the net amount. So let's say that this property was worth $2.7 million. On the entire 2.7, 30% had to be kept away by the and given to the U.S. government unless certain forms were filled and all. So when they got the buyer and they got the deal, they struck the deal, then they came to know that this had to be withheld. And that's when they came to us, you know. So it's all this post-mortem stuff that kind of keeps us on our feet.
The shocks. We don't like these shocks at all.
You know, that's actually an interesting point, and I'm glad that you brought that up. But there must be a lot of value, right, in the world of cross-border finance to have experience in the world of financing in both places that you kind of practice in. Because I guess the experience of one will probably inform how you treat clients in that cross-border scenario. Maybe let's talk about that a little bit.
There are two aspects. Again, I will talk about the hard aspect, which is the finance or the technical aspect, and then the soft aspect, which is the understanding the family dynamics in all of this. If you've grown up here, you understand some portion of it, but if you go away right after your graduation, then a lot of your molding takes place with values of that system. But if you worked here like I did for 10 years in the joint family business and understand the dynamics of joint family business, you know, saas bhi kabhi bahu thi kind of situations, you know. So,
okay. I know that those are still going on. Even today, I love that's still happening.
If you understand those things, then when you talk to the families, you tend to understand what's going on.
Yeah.
So that is the soft side of it. But the technical side of it, I think more importantly to understand is, like, nobody in the US will ever understand the concept of an HUF, you know. a person who has actually had his own HUF, has dealt with it, has done investments for HUFs through the investment management that we did when we were here, in my work, dealt with a joint family manufacturing business and all the stress that comes along with that, you know, the licensing and all the stuff. And despite the changes, you do recognize it. And when someone in the US says something like, let's just go back and do this change. No, that's not the way this thing functions in this side of the water, you know. So that's, I think understanding that and being able to communicate the relevance of having the right advisors on the other side, I think has helped us to be more add more value to our clients and to get a bigger share of their lives, so to say, you know.
Yeah, and that's also really, you know, relevant now. Has it been especially useful, this partnership, having both of you really, you know, having your own experiences in, you know, a little bit here, a little bit there? Has that brought like a special kind of value to this cross-border financing and, you know, financial advisory relationship?
Yeah, and I think the good thing is that both of us are in that mode where we don't start with from the place that we know everything.
Right.
That we know that, you know, there may be some things that we don't know, so let's reach out and... you don't know that yet, okay. So that we can reach out to the right professional and get that input and advice. And I think that having dealt with client situations and some of those that you asked us about today, we know that that client has faced, let's say, five different types of situations in that one example itself. Then we meet somebody else, one or two of these may be common. So then it becomes a great value add to the next client because we've already gone through this, right? So that becomes helpful. It's just that we have to keep verifying that that situation is still relevant.
Okay.
The law has not changed. Something has not, you know, something new we've not become aware of, which we did not know earlier. And that keeps happening. In fact, while we were in Bangalore together, we met a whole bunch of CAs in Bangalore and spoke to them. And I think some of the things that we were saying, we actually got contra advice from two different chartered accountants. This is our view, this is our view. We said, okay, that means we have to do a further deep dive in this before we suggest it to our clients.
So, do you remember like the first client that maybe you shared or referred to each other?
The first person was my mother, whom I referred to him, you know.
Yeah.
Because after we met in 2005, he came in 2006 and he talked to me.
Please tell us how you met.
Oh, okay. It was a dark and stormy afternoon at New Orleans Airport. Okay. Now, seriously, it was dark and stormy in New York, and our flight, we were at a conference. Both of us, but we didn't know that we were at the same conference.
We had finished the conference and we were at the airport.
At the airport, both of us were going to fly to New York. For me, it was going home. For him, it was...
Also going home. I think I was going to New York and then
meet some people and then fly back to India.
Yeah.
And the flight was delayed. So at that time, power outlets were not necessarily a thing that was available. So you had to find a pillar. And you had to find a pillar where there was a chair next to it, or you had to sit on the ground, plug in your laptop and work on it. Now, 3 hours means we needed power.
Yeah.
So we were close to a pillar, both of us. And eventually we realized that, hey, we are both working, but we are not even saying hello to each other. So ended up chatting and ended up realizing, oh, we'd attended the same meeting. And then, oh, there's so many things happening
this
in the...
This is what we call a bromance.
Yeah.
Oh, is it? Okay.
So that's where it began. And then he came... I think
we then exchanged a few newsletters. And then I think the next year when I was going to the US, I said, oh, you know, why don't we meet? And at that time, I will say this, that I already had a few clients who had moved to the US and... I was seeking that, okay, can I find an advisor who can deal with clients in multiple states?
Mm-hmm.
Because whoever I had met would say, oh, I will deal with clients only in Illinois. I will deal with clients only in Texas. I can't, you know, and Indians are everywhere, so as you know, and now there are more of them.
Need a more expansive.
Yeah. So we needed people who were elsewhere. And so I went to meet him and I said, you know, I have these clients. So he says, no problem. I will take licensing and I can deal with them, or I already have some license. I said, oh, great.
Okay.
So that's how I said, okay, if I have clients, I will refer. And while he'll tell you a story about his mother, but I remember referring one client's portfolio to him. I said, here is a client's portfolio. You know, please have a look, because now I can go and show the client, see, I've got it verified or checked with the US advisor, and these are the changes you have to make. And he sent it back and said, yeah, it's good. Okay. I said, what do you mean it's good? He says, yeah, there's nothing to change. And I said, wow, here's I found somebody who's not hungry to, okay, I have to move everything because only then I will get credit and stuff like that. So that was my story with him, but he has his story.
So mom was alone here. We had migrated to the US and mom was alone here. And there was investments which I had transferred all to her name because I didn't want it, you know, US income laws and everything. And so I started talking to him. Then the big thing that I found about him versus anybody else was that anyone you talk to, yeah, we'll do this stock portfolio and we'll do it in equity mutual fund. And in my mom at that time was already 65. That age. And so we needed someone. And then I started asking, how would you do it? And he talked about debt and debt portfolios and the possibility of doing debt, you know, in the right way. Mm-hmm. And he was one of the few advisors whom I've come upon. Even today, I find that the bulk of, yeah, I agree, returns are in equity and you need equity in the portfolio. But you need a balanced approach and you also need an approach from the client's perspective. I mean, there might be clients who might be willing to accept that low rate of return. In the long run, it doesn't pay off, but willingness to accept that, willingness to recommend, and then he took over. And then the other big thing was the service part, which I think was great. My mom is alone, so they were willing to send everybody, get paperwork done, take care of the needs. And I think that those are some of the elements which I think even today Lowai's firm stays true to. I think it boils down to, what are your core values? Is it just I want to say negative things about people, but we do meet other financial advisors, and this one guy whom I meet, his lead conversation with me at every conference is, last year 2500 crore ka, had 2500 crores, this time I have 2800 crores, you know. So that asset-based growth is the only measure of how well he is doing, versus when I talk to Lowai, it's about, we expanded into this service, now we're able to help in this way also, etc.
So but he got enough good cups of tea from your mom, so I think that was good.
It felt reciprocal. Yeah.
You know, I actually think that fun stuff outside of the financial advisory is also important to understand and acknowledge, because it really does contribute and lend to. I mean, at the end of the day, you know, all of us in every profession that we're in, our experiences inform the way that we kind of navigate our personal careers as well, right? So I'm sure something like financial advisory has a huge experiential element to it. So thank you for touching upon that. And actually, it gives me an idea for maybe a series to come, because we do need to kind of talk about, you know, all of that experiential stuff lending itself to how, you know, certain cases in cross-border are treated. So maybe keep an eye out for that. But that's an aside. As we come to the end of this series, Paresh, Lowai, I do want to ask each of you, you know, what is your one message? If you could tell people right now one thing to pay attention to in the world of cross-border financing, what would that be? You know, you did say plant your oak tree as soon as you can. So what would it be?
The pandemic has hit us hard. And it has shown us, it has literally put a mirror to our face that tomorrow should not be taken for granted. So I would say that the first firm that I worked for in the US, and a general agency of an insurance company where I was an insurance agent and an advisor, The tagline was protect for today and build for tomorrow. And most people focus on build for tomorrow. They don't look at protect for today. And I think that would be the biggest place. So while you're building for tomorrow, are you ensuring that when times change, you have all the protections in place. Do you have your legal documents, your wills, your which will be effective in any jurisdiction? You know, are they created properly? Are they documented properly? Are your beneficiary designations proper? You know, the things that can change overnight if you're unable to sign a document, you know, for whatever reason, either it's a broken hand or a stroke, you know. I think that approach to ensuring that again brings me to the original point, the same thing that I said, you know, plant it today because tomorrow should not be taken for granted.
So my focus has also been a lot on protecting downside. And I think that nobody seems to be looking at that. And to take on from what Paresh said, so there are two parts to the downside piece. One is identifying that this is downside, and two, having the comfort and confidence to talk to a client about potential bad news. So I think that's very crucial. So okay. We are not afraid to talk about, you know, the reality of mortality. Everyone talks about in case something, you know, unforeseen happens. And I think it's foreseen. It's only question is when, it's not clear, right? So I don't know why we use that wrong English to say this.
Dropping some truth bombs, very out of the blue.
Yeah. So that's number one. So having that conversation about, what is this a worst case type of scenario? We're not saying we should live with, you know, doomsday about to happen, but I think be aware about it, number one. Number two, to take on the point on, wills, etc. I think people tend to push it to very late. The moment you have assets, you should have a will. You can keep modifying it over time, but that's important. But even if you don't have a will, and I think you should, but let's take the names in which your investments are made, your bank account is, your property is. Please, please make sure that it tallies exactly with Aadhaar. And if it's not, and go and check whether Aadhaar tallies with passport and driving license. Because we are finding lots and lots of people where I have invested with name, surname. I have invested in name, middle name, full, and surname. I have invested with name, middle name, initial, and surname. My driving license is in one format, Aadhaar is in a second format, passport is a third format. It is going to be difficult for someone else to get that money. So get those pieces in place. I think that's very crucial to happen. Sorry for the truth bomb, but that's what it is.
There's at least the second or third one. Don't apologize. It's important, like you said.
And that's the end. I think a good end, though. Thank you, Paresh and Lovai. It's been a fantastic series, but we're not done with the series because we do love a good set of episodes on Simply Lovai. I'm sure we'll be bringing you many, many more. And yes, I will put the email IDs. And also, maybe you guys should consider being fitness instructors. I'm just saying, we love lenient fitness instructors like both of you. But no, in all seriousness, thank you so much for helping us unpack the world of cross-border financing. I think a lot of people now have a lot to think about, really, when it comes to their personal finances and how their, you know, future considerations will actually impact and can impact the present. So I guess we've given people food for thought. This food and fitness analogy is just not leaving me. That's an end to this episode in this series on Simply Lovai, everybody. Ahalya signing off for now, but we'll be back soon. Thank you, Lovai. Thank you, Paresh.
Thank you.
That was an episode of the Simply Lovai podcast series, Expert with a Heart.